The Mazda CX-30 all-wheel drive is equipped with an advanced suite of safety technologies, including automatic emergency braking and driver attention alert. The Mazda CX-30 offers Apple CarPlay and Android Auto to complement its premium cabin design. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com for more information. With health and safety top of mind, Mazda's CUVs feature an advanced suite of safety technologies, including automatic emergency braking, blind spot monitoring, and lane keep assist. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com for more information.
Are you a gig worker or self-employed? Womply has helped over 100,000 small businesses get a PPP stimulus loan and proudly serves more than 600,000 small businesses across America. Millions of self-employed workers may qualify for up to $41,000 in 100% forgivable loans. So, apply today. The program ends soon, and funds are limited. Apply now at womply.com/apply and see if you qualify for a PPP loan. womply.com/apply. That's womply.com/apply.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Stuart Sink. Stuart, welcome to Talking Golf.
Well, thank you, Ann. Nice to be on.
8-time PGA Tour winner and your most recent victory coming last weekend at the RBC Heritage. Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It was great.
I bet. I mean, you wowed everyone last weekend. It was your third RBC Heritage title on Hilton Head, your second title of the season, and you did it with record-breaking scores to boot, the lowest 36-hole score and the lowest 54-hole score in tournament history. So tell me, are you still on cloud nine?
Anytime you get a win on the PGA Tour, you're on cloud nine. For a little while anyway, until you tee it up again and you hit that first ball in the water or a three putt or something like that and drags you right back down to earth. But yes, I would have to say it feels like cloud nine still.
It was so heartwarming to watch it last weekend. Your entire family was there to celebrate. I know your son Reagan caddied for you. Your wife Lisa was there. Your other son Connor flew in. What a great family affair.
It was like a dream. I mean, I've had my share of wins, and they've all been fun and unique. But, you know, contrasting to one particular win I remember having at Travelers in Hartford where I was not with any family, I won the tournament, did a few interviews, and then called my wife, and she said, oh, yeah, we were watching it on tape delayed, and I think the round was early. So it finished at, like, 1 p.m., and the coverage didn't even start until 3. And so they were like, we're on the boat. We celebrated for a second. And then it's like, okay, y'all want some lunch? And it was like, it was the opposite from this, where we got to all celebrate together. And all my kids are adults. Well, both my kids are adults now. And it was a really, really cool moment there for really just the whole weekend. It was awesome.
Well, can you talk about how your son, Reagan, caddy for you? How does that help you? I know he was on your bag last September when you won the Safeway Open, but how different is it when he actually is caddying for you?
Well, I think the best way to describe Reagan's caddying for me and our relationship out there and the way it's impacted me is it's kind of there's a couple of pluses and a couple of minuses. And what I mean by that is the pluses are pretty obvious to see on the coverage and when you hear or you read my interviews or whatever, that, you know, we just have this great relationship and we trust each other. He knows golf really well. He's a scratch player, but the way he thinks about golf and the way he deciphers information about the shot, like the lies and the hole locations and the wind direction and stuff like that, like the real like minutiae of deciding how to hit shots, he's way above a scratch level in that regard. I mean, he's like a tour player. And so we have really good high-level discussions about what to expect on the shot. I trust him. He trusts me. So that's really the pluses. The minuses are it's not what it sounds like. I don't mean, it's a negative thing. But what I mean is he takes away a certain thing, too, that I've always experienced with caddies, and that is there's just zero conflict with me and Reagan ever on decision-making. And with my other caddies, all of my caddies in my career, I've always dealt with a little bit of that. And I think that's something that all player and caddy relationships go through. But there's just a little bit of a difference in the philosophy of how are we going to attack the course today? How are we going to attack this hole this week? How are we going to play the 15th hole if it's downwind versus if it's into the wind? And, you know, all the hole locations change every day. The conditions are constantly evolving. we don't ever have any dissent between us, no disagreements. And if we do ever have any kind of a different take on something, then we talk it out and we get on the same page. So the minus would be that there's just it minus any kind of conflict or disagreement out there. And it's just, it's like a really decisive round of golf that I play every day. And I know he's going to be right alongside.
That's awesome. Will he, do you think he'll switch to this as a full-time gig?
Well, no, I know he won't, because I'm the boss in that regard. And I don't want my son to end up caddying forever. He started off caddying for me just as a one-off. He was working for Delta Airlines in the last couple years of his education at Georgia Tech. He did a co-op there where he was working every other semester. And he was really loving it there and thriving. And then Delta offered him a full-time position, but it was at the same time that COVID started. And so they kind of retracted the position just because, like, they didn't, you know, airlines, I mean, I think that's doesn't need really further explanation. And
right.
So his job was being, a little bit of an uncertainty there. And during the meantime, well, he was kind of waiting around for that to start. He said, hey, I'd love to caddy for you again. And the last, I think he's caddied for me three times before Napa last fall. But it was more when he was a teenager and he was still kind of a kid caddy. And it was cool. Like, oh, I'm going to caddy for my dad. But then when he and I played a ton of golf together and he's grown up a lot. And so he said, I'll caddy for you sometime. And I thought, well, you know, I've got this tournament coming up at Safeway in Napa. Why don't you caddy there? Sounds good. That was 10 days before the tournament. And so it was supposed to be just a one-off thing. And then we go out and we win. And so we decided to ride it out one more tournament. And I told him, if we finish top five, you'll keep going. And we finished 12th. Although when I putted in on the 18th hole, I was top five. And then, you know, I ended up finishing 12th. So we had another good week. And then it kept ballooning into, okay, how about one more tournament? And then we thought, well, you know what? I won. I'm in the Masters now, in large part due to my play with you on the bag. So why don't you caddy for me at the Masters? And then we said, well, you know what? Enough of this. I had a fourth place finish at Bermuda, which was a good finish there too. And I said, you know, why don't we just think about just doing this for the whole season? I really enjoy it. And you seem to enjoy it. And we have a great chemistry. And no surprise, Lisa's traveling. So the three of us together, now we don't have our older son, Connor, who works full time. He's not out there all the time, but it just turned into, like, let's make it this season. And you just caddy for me all the way through the FedEx Cup as long as we go. And Reagan's actually engaged to get married in July. So his life is, he's a caddy right now, but pretty soon he's going to become a new husband. And I wouldn't wish that on any wife in the world. After what I've gone through in my life and my wife has persevered through all these years of traveling, I wouldn't want either of my kids to be separated from their spouse to caddy. And that's just, we won't do that. So he's going to caddy for me this season. And however long we go in the playoffs, that'll be the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a great ride. But I understand, I mean, the travel is just insane. And it's a tough life out there. So your wife, Lisa, said she is in awe at how well you are playing at this stage in your career. Even your wife is surprised, right?
Well, she's surprised. Like, I would have to say that Lisa's husband is also surprised a little bit, you know, by the – I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have expected, you know, to have two wins this season already, and maybe more to come, who knows. But it's I'm a little bit surprised at the results, although I've got a lot of good things going for me in golf. And that is, I think, number one, I've got a great support team. I've got Lisa. I mean, I don't think a lot of people name their spouse as a support team member, but I've got my coaches, I've got my trainer. Lisa's excellent, just that knowing me and knowing how I tick, I guess. And also, I just love playing. I love trying to get better at golf and trying to figure out the big puzzle that golf is. And if I didn't have that love and passion for the game, then I would have probably already just hung them up. And I can't imagine doing this without, you know, I'm excited to go and practice golf every day. I'm disappointed when I'm at home and it's raining and I can't get my drills in. I like doing it. And I just am a student of the game and I love it. And You know, without that, it wouldn't be possible. So I got a lot of good things going for me, and so just keep on having some fun and trying to take the golf courses apart and see where it goes.
I just love your joy and enthusiasm. It is so great to see. And you're going to turn 48 soon. So, and, you know, I was reading where your driving distance average has improved from 295 last year to 306 yards. And after an 11-year drought in the winner's circle since you won that 2009 Open Championship, you've won twice so far this season. So what do you think is the secret?
It's a tangible difference, because I set out to make that difference last year. Didn't have that great a year, and I was disappointed because I played some of the best golf of my life during the pandemic, when we were on hold, and I was playing these little events around Atlanta that I organized for a lot of the pros and some of the gals that play around here, and some of the college players, just like to give everybody something to play in. I organized these little 1 or 2 day events the whole time we were at home. And I played amazing, and it was the best golf I've ever played probably in a consistent stretch for those months. And it didn't translate to the PGA Tour, though, when I started back, and I was disappointed in that. Didn't make the FedEx Cup playoffs last year, so I was disappointed in that. Had some time off to sort of think about it, and I got together with my group and my coaching and figured that I'm just not doing something right. And so we figured that after looking at the stats and looking at some of my launch monitor information with my driving, that I was a little bit inefficient with my driving. And we decided to try to get that a little bit better. And I just got my my launch angle and my speed a little bit better through just a little change in my ball position. And that helped me tweak my equipment to where I could be more efficient too. So I got kind of a 1-2 punch of improvement there. I got my attack angle was better, and it enabled me to take some loft off the driver, which helped reduce the spin. So I got a better launch, higher, faster, with less spin, and that just equals more distance. And so I was able to take advantage of like really becoming a different kind of a driver of the ball. And boy, it just popped right away. I mean, in Napa, that was 10 days after I did this little test and improvement, and it went right to the course and straight to the scorecard immediately. It was just I was a different golfer right away. And I've been mostly that way this whole year and continuing to build on that and gain on it. And yeah, I mean, I've found that driving it longer and a little bit straighter makes golf a little bit easier.
So you it's basically you were tweaking the equipment then.
Well, I tweaked my setup and my a little bit of my mechanics, not a lot, but mm-hmm. my setup and my mechanics got a little bit of an adjustment. And because the club was attacking the ball at a slightly different part in the arc, I was able to change the equipment to match that. And in both cases, it just meant a little bit higher and faster ball
sure.
with a little bit less spin, which just it's like the holy grail of driving. If you can increase your ball speed, your launch angle, and reduce your spin, then you're just going to have more consistent, better, more efficient ball flight. And that works in all conditions, whether wind's blowing down or in or whatever, it doesn't matter. So you can just take that right to the course and it's better immediately.
How about physically, Stuart? Do you go to the gym? Do you weight train? Do you work on, you know, strengthening your core?
Yeah, all those things are super important. I had an injury in 19, a back injury, lower back, and a lot of golfers go through that. And it's the first time I ever had to miss any time with an injury. And I just, during that injury, I started working with a new trainer to kind of help me out of it. Cornell Dreesen is his name, and he works with a lot of golfers. He's a South African guy. And so we kind of pinpointed where the injury was occurring, and we saw that it was actually golf that was causing my injury. I had been trying to do a certain, kind of a mechanical or feel kind of thing in my swing to produce a certain kind of shot. And it was great. It was working great. I played well in 18 and had one of my better years in a while. I'm not saying a whole lot because I didn't have a stack of great years there from about 2011 on.
Sure.
But 18 was a good year. But as it turned out, the little move I was doing in my swing was causing some was causing some trouble in my lower back, and I had to get out of that. But what it did was it caused me to strengthen the area, and I continued in the gym. But with Cornell's oversight, I was able to pinpoint the areas to get stronger and add flexibility and just to sort of retarget my fitness goals. And it turned out, I didn't know it at the time, but coming out of that injury as a little bit stronger, a little bit more informed player, that sort of set the table for me to be able to make these other changes a year or so later and not go right back on the bench with an injury.
And how about your mindset? I mean, has the mental side of your game, your approach changed?
It has a little bit. I've always worked really hard on the mental side of the game, partly out of necessity because I have to work really hard on the mental side of the game, but also because I look around. I mean, I've been playing golf a long time, and I used to look at and marvel at players like Curtis Strange and Paul Azinger and Tom Lehman, Lee Jansen. Those were my, you know, the guys that were my seniors when I came out on tour. And now that I'm the senior guy, I look and I marvel at guys like Colin Morikawa and Matt Wolf and the young kids that are just like, they're astonishingly good. And just like I used to, I look at those older guys back then and wonder what are they doing that I need to be doing more of? And now I just look the other direction and look at the younger kids and look at what are they doing that I need to do more of? So, my mindset has always required work, and everybody's does, but everybody can do the physical parts of the game pretty much equally. I mean, obviously some guys pound it off the tee, like Dustin Johnson and Bryson, you know, those guys are in another league. I'll never be able to do that. But for the most part, everybody on tour does all the parts of the game well, but you got to find something in between, like lurking in the shadows that can help you gain an edge. And for me, that edge has always been managing the course really well, managing myself really well mentally, and understanding where those emotions come from, you know, those little demons that we all have, the voices in your head, so to speak. I feel like I have like a full ensemble in there sometimes talking, but yeah, I mean, that's the mental side of the game. That's just, it requires work. And then, as far as like an approach, when Reagan started caddying for me, all that conflict and all the sort of disagreement and dissent with caddies of the past just melted away, and Reagan was on board for anything. And so we implemented a kind of a statistics-based approach that is more of a, it's not really a mental side of the game thing, it's more of an operational side of the game, and an approach that sort of dictates how much trouble you should take on with your shots based on how far you are from the hole and what your ball is sitting in, fairway versus rough. And we stick to it. We stick to the goal 100% of the time. And it has been great for making emotionless decisions on the course and not letting, you know, where we are in a tournament sort of get in the way. And it just leaves the executing up to me. And so I've been pretty good at executing lately, and that's the results have been great.
And so what do you think about now when you're staring down a short putt?
Well, you know, the putting, putting is something that just comes and goes for everybody. Even the best putters, it's such a chancy, vague thing that, you know, to get a ball to go in the hole from 25 feet, it's just, there's a lot of variables. And so, I tend to take a lot of peace and rest in that fact alone that, hey, it's not always going to be there. So I think my expectations are in a good place in putting, that I'm not waking up scared that I might miss that first 2-footer, because I know I'm going to miss a 2-footer at some point in today or tomorrow or next week. It's going to happen. And I'm prepared for that, knowing that everybody goes through that stuff. So there was a time in my career when I did fear that, and I didn't feel comfortable on those, you know, certain short putts that just have a way of bothering everybody in golf. But now I feel very, very at ease with, you know, the makes and the misses, and I understand the percentages and all that. And I just try to just be the best I can in the present and be peaceful. And I rely on my process, the things I can control, and let it happen. And if it, you know, some weeks like down at Harbortown, I didn't have short misses really from anywhere inside maybe 5 feet. I don't remember. I may have missed one putt from inside 5 feet, and everything else was in the dead center. So, you know, some weeks it happens, and then other weeks you can't quite find it and get there. But my expectations are in a good place with all that.
It sounds like it. It's amazing. A couple more questions, Stuart Sink. When you were going through that winless drought, did you ever think that perhaps that 2009 Open Championship might just be your last hurrah? I mean, was there ever a time when you thought, gosh, I'm just never going to win again?
Well, the way you asked the question, I almost was able to say absolutely, but you changed one word, and I thought you were going to say, did you ever think that 2009 might be your last win? If you had asked me that, I would have said, absolutely. Every day I thought, I wonder if that was my last win. But you said, did you ever think that was your last hurrah?
Uh-huh.
And so I would say that I never thought that was going to be my last hurrah, because I don't just get my hurrahs from winning golf tournaments. You know, I love playing and competing and learning about myself. And even the failures give you something to learn from. You know, the out of bounds on the 15th hole and on the last day when you're in contention, or the three putt, you know, on the 72nd hole. Those things even give you something to hurrah about if you look at it the right way. And so I try to get a hurrah out of every day. And so I can definitely not say absolutely to that question the way you phrased it. Almost, but not quite.
I love it. Great answer. Great answer. How about the Ryder Cup? I mean, with your stellar play this year, do you think you have a shot? And would that be a goal for you to make another Ryder Cup team?
Well, I think of goals as more like things I can do every day on the course and when I'm practicing to achieve goals that are not really results-oriented. They're more like things I can control, like can I do my process as well? Can I be prepared and committed and decisive on every shot? Those are my goals, and believe me, I know that's like yawn material for media, but and my wife would agree. She's like, oh, those aren't goals. But I'm like, yeah, those are goals. Those are kind of goals I like to set. I like to think of things like wins and Ryder Cup team membership, making the teams on stuff like that, Ryder Cup and President's Cup, as more rewards. And the rewards are a product of you achieving those little goals that may be, you know, yawn material. But for me, it's pretty exciting. So, I do know that I got a text from Stricker after he won the Champions event last week, and then I won on the same day at Harbortown at RBC Heritage. And he said, hey, great win. Man, awesome to see you playing great, and we'd love to have you as part of the team. And then I thought, shoot, I wonder if I'm close to qualifying for the Ryder Cup now with two wins this season. But then I looked, and I'm like 26th in the standings. So I think I have to do a lot more work this year. I've won two times and I'm only 26. So that would indicate to me that I've got to win probably two more times to be in that team. And, you know, if I do that and get up there, then it would be just like an unbelievable experience. You know, I remember playing with Jay Haas when he was about 50, I think, on the Ryder Cup team. He qualified, and I thought that was really cool. And so if I could be, you know, part of that team, then that would just be really special.
Well, that was quite the encouraging text from the captain, Steve Stricker.
Yeah, I mean, we're friends, and he texts me when I play well, and we, you know, catch up. Nikki and Lisa are friends, but yeah, I mean, I was pretty excited by that, but then I was kind of dejected when I looked at the rankings, and I was 26.
Well, there's still time, Stuart Sink. There's still time. So now, how would you want your career to be defined? How would you like your career to be defined when all is said and done? Not you know, you have plenty to go, obviously, but if you had to answer the question right now, what would it be?
I hate the phrase "nice guys finish last" because I like to really develop relationships and be a good guy and nice and a good listener to all my peers out there. I really enjoy that part. And I would like for them to erase that phrase from our vocabulary at the end of my career and say, you know what? Not all nice guys finish last. Because I don't think that's true. I think you can be arrogant on the inside like I am. I'm arrogant and I'm confident. But you don't have to let that stuff show up in your relationships with other people or with the media. You don't have to be an a-hole, you know, to be arrogant. I am very confident and very arrogant and believe 100% in what I'm doing. And I don't think that should stop me from being a nice guy and a good friend and somebody who, like, I care more about what they have to say than what I want to say. So I'd like to eradicate the phrase "nice guys finish last" from our vocabulary. That'd be a good way for me to go out.
And I can't let you go without asking how Lisa's doing. I know she is a stage 4 breast cancer survivor, and you took time off from golf to be at her side, and then she joined you on the road. And I recently watched, you know, that video that the PGA Tour put together with you both. I guess it came out a couple years ago, and it was just so touching. And I just definitely wanted to see how she's doing. It was great to see her last weekend enjoying all the festivities. Is she doing okay?
Yeah, she's doing okay. And I appreciate you asking about her. You know, every time I go and talk about myself and winning tournaments and all that, you know, that's all fun. But I always remember that, you know, Lisa's going through something that is not always trophies and plaid jackets. Her birthday is April 25th, and her diagnosis came in 2016 on, I believe it was April 28th. So she's coming up on her 5-year anniversary very soon of her diagnosis, which in, you know, your cancer diagnosis journey, that's a pretty big deal. And she's in a really good remission. She's been in remission for 4.5 years now. So she's doing great. She's got some side effects. She still gets treatment every 3 weeks, being a stage 4 patient. But one of the things that we try to do and try to come to terms with as far as that part of our life is, what's the message here? You know, she's a good eater. She's been very disciplined in her life, even way before her diagnosis. But she's handled it just incredibly. And one of the things that we've come away with is that our relationship, in a lot of ways, not every way, but in a lot of ways, is just a sweeter, deeper type relationship than it used to be. And our faith is just incredibly sharp, you know. And it wasn't so in the years before 2016 necessarily. And I think one of our biggest encouragements to people is that it doesn't take something like a cancer diagnosis or losing someone you're dear to, some tragedy in your life, to experience like a sharpening of your faith or a deepening of a relationship with someone who you love. That it's available to people now without that kind of a tragedy to shake your life up. And I just think that we wait until something bad happens, and it's not necessary. There's a lot of good things that come out of something like a cancer diagnosis. You just really have to search hard for what they are. But when you do find those, it makes them that much better.
Sure. And I remember hearing her say, "I'm thankful for today. I'm thankful for now. I don't know what tomorrow will bring, but I do have today." And those are words of wisdom, if I've ever heard them, for everybody to live by. And Stuart, I just want to thank you so much for joining me. And may I say to you that nice guys finish first, and you're a true testament to that. So I so appreciate you coming on Talking Golf. Really, really a joy to talk with you.
Well, thank you. You got it. My pleasure.
The 3-row Mazda CX-9 all-wheel drive is equipped with optional second-row captain's chairs and an advanced suite of safety technologies, including automatic emergency braking. The Mazda CX-9 offers Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com for more information. With health and safety top of mind, Mazda's CUVs feature an advanced suite of safety technologies, including automatic emergency braking, blind spot monitoring, and lane keep assist. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com for more information.
Are you a gig worker or self-employed? Wamply has helped over 100,000 small businesses get a PPP stimulus loan, and you may qualify for up to $41,000 in 100% forgivable loans. The program ends soon and funds are limited. Apply now at wamply.com/apply. That's WOMPLY.com/apply.